Hey everybody, just a quick heads up before the episode starts. This week we had some recording issues with the software where we lost some segments of the episode. During the second half, you're going to hear a quick quick audio interlude is what you'll hear, where one subject kind of ends and another kind of abruptly begins. That was the easiest way I could patch it together. Luckily, we only lost about 6 minutes of content. We went over a little bit this week anyway, so we should be good to go. But yep, just wanted to apologize for that and give you a heads up. Thanks for listening. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Snapcast. I'm Bobby.
I'm Alex.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Chris.
Episode 8, guys. That's like 2 solid months of this, and we're still not sick of each other yet. So to celebrate our 2 month anniversary, we're recording by candlelight tonight.
I like to call it our little 8 candle bring to light. No, we're done.
So next week we'll be auditioning for a new fourth person for the Snapcast.
We got Jerry on standby.
Yeah, there we go. Is he free tonight? No. But anyway, so usually we record in the morning. The room has no lights in it. We never even really thought about it. Had to record at night. So yeah, brought to you by candlelight tonight. But all right, yeah, so let's talk about some new standard, man. The Open was like, it's pretty solid. There's some new deck lists. There's some new stuff. What did you guys like? What didn't you like?
Seeing the mana bases shake out was interesting. Yeah. A lot of it is just, you can just splash color.
Play whatever you want. Yeah.
It's free mana.
It's so smooth anymore. And I mean, we saw the standard decks that kind of ran a little bit towards the end before rotation. They just shined this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's very reminiscent of modern mana base. I mean, it's just about there. Obviously, it's not, but man, the fourth color being added to the 3 colors, like, for anyone who didn't see the Open, I mean, the way that the mana plays out, you're essentially splashing a color for free. The extra fetches you get and the extra dual lands from the new cycle, like, you're not really paying any cost to add that fourth color. So what, it was like Jeskai Black?
Yep, Jeskai Green.
And then Abzan Blue was a big one, one of the team decks for Star City. So yeah, I mean, so you had a lot of returning decks with, you know, additional splashes. But what about some of the newer decks? Well, one, I know, Chris, you liked a deck, right?
I like the green-white Megamorph deck.
Yeah.
Because I was playing green-white before me and Alex sat down, and he was like, hey, I've seen something like this work out. And I was a real fan, but now watching what Michael Majors threw together, it's just a conglomeration of good cards.
Yep. It's just all the best cards in green and white.
And I mean, with not dealing with Elspeth anymore. I mean, I know that was a huge roadblock for the deck. So that being gone, it shined.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest roadblock now for decks like that is like Gideon, but that's only putting down one token. It's not the same equivalent of just board stalled.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Instant board presence. Yeah, no, that's way easier to deal with. Because what it was running the command too, right? Dromoka's command.
Yep.
And
Hanger Backwalker.
Yeah, nothing else really from the new set though, right? It was pretty much just the lands.
He went back, we were playing the Arishin? What was the flyer that we were running?
High Sentinels of Arishin.
High Sentinels of Arishin, but he went with Wingmate Rock.
Mm. Which
I like right now because the board presence position, especially against Abzan, where they're very 1-for-1 removal. I'm playing 2-for-1, so.
And flying is relevant.
And flying, so you can just go over the top.
Yeah.
He was running Gideon was the main.
Four of Gideon. Yeah, Gideon exploded. I think he was in most of the top 8 decks, right?
Yeah, quite a few.
Top 16, even more, higher percentage. I mean, yeah, Gideon looked real nice. I mean, on paper, he looks fine, so it's not surprising.
On paper, he's the quickest one to see where it slots in. I still, personal opinion, Kior is better. It just, that deck hasn't flushed out
yet. Kior is more build around Gideon. Yeah, exactly. Just throwed in the 60, Yeah, no, he slots into a lot of stuff real easily. I like the green-white deck, too. Not much innovation there, though, really. And then, a Tarka Red?
Red took it.
Yeah, so again, but that's to be expected with the first Open. It's mostly what people have, what people can get easily. You're not going to see, a new deck come out.
And not only that, but it being an aggro deck, that's not a surprise. If you look at the past few Opens post-release, it's always been mono red aggro or a Tarka red.
I think the biggest surprise there is actually the 2 Esper Dragons in top 8.
Yes.
The fact that a control deck can already, and that deck was already good. It just got better mana.
Yeah, but I think a big part of it too, though, is that they're not really having to deal with new threats yet either. You know what I mean? So Hero's Downfall's out, the new then you slow sorcerer Ruinous speed path. One. Yeah, Ruinous Path is in. I mean, I could see why there's probably a lot of Esper Dragons. I think it was, though, on the day two when they posted it, it was Abzan Aggro that was like 36 copies of it.
It had the most day twos and none of them top aided. Yeah, but yeah, not top aided. Which kind of speaks of the deck, like it's consistent but not overly powerful.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what that means. Definitely looking forward to next weekend. Is next weekend the Pro Tours or the weekend after?
The weekend after. The
weekend after. So next weekend, is there an open?
Yes, Atlanta.
Gotcha, yeah. So the open will shake out a little bit more. We'll get some more innovation. And then, yeah, the Pro Tours where you'll really see, like, I mean, because that's where, like, Mono Blue Devotion came out.
That's that's where, like, the pros are kind of sandbag a little bit for these first couple opens. Exactly. They play something similar to get the feel, and then they switch to what they're actually going to play.
Yeah, yeah. Mostly they're doing research now to see what other people are doing.
Right.
Don't want to reveal your trick too far yet.
Exactly.
So you guys know what you're playing for standard yet?
I'm in between. I thought I had it figured out. I was going to run Tamura Midrange. I played a couple events this weekend. I ran Jeskai Dragons because it's mostly what I had already.
Yeah.
Not changing too much. And when I was playing at a PPTQ, somebody was running Mono Green Eldrazi, and it was really good. And it crushed me, and I'm looking into that now, too.
Now, we got to back up there real quick. Is that was a PPTQ?
Yes.
Guys, Alex, top four to PPTQ. Can't be stopped.
Yeah.
Like, how many? We won't go into details. But that was a good performance, man. That was awesome. I was glad to see that. Any other takeaways from that event?
There was a lot of Esper there, but it was Shaheen's store, so not a lot. That's to be expected. Everybody was just running what Serrani was running. Esper Dragons also top aided there. A lot of it. Atarka Red was there. Green White Hardened Scales.
Yeah, I think there was one of the top 16 too for the open. Yeah.
There was, yeah. No, that deck is pretty legitimate as well. It's another one of those decks, for the same reason I was running Jeskai and Manus Rider. It's aggressive. Like, it's aggressive, but it beats the other aggressive decks.
Yeah.
Like, it's aggressive enough to punish people messing around with mana bases and things like that, but it's not going to lose to a Tarka Red.
Still has some late game power, too. Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, those are definitely solid week one choices.
Yeah. So I don't know if it'll stick around, but it's definitely solid week one.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of indicative of the whole meta right now. It's a lot of, is it going to stick around? We'll see. We'll see what shakes out.
Right.
You guys hooked on decks?
Alex's list for Tamura Midrange, I really enjoy a lot. Also, too, I do like the Atarka Red list. I'm curious to see how it's going to do from here on out, though, because it's definitely going to be the deck to take down. It's going to be the deck everyone's going to be picking up that in Green White Megamorph. But yeah. I think I'm going to stick with Tamura Midrange just because I really like playing Midrange, and the deck that Alex posted was, I mean, it's solid list.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Did we share that list with the listeners?
Yes, it was in the article.
Okay, cool. And then the Jeskai list you played, was that the same one from the article? Nice. Yeah. So look, guys, there's some valuable stuff in there. Chris, what about you?
I mean, right now I really like the green white. So I'll probably either stay with green white, maybe go with Tarka Red. I'm not full on it because I really like the card Exquisite Firecraft.
Yeah.
That's a solid card. I'll probably give the Tamur list a look just because I've wanted Tamur to be good.
Right.
But this might be one of the first times that it's positioned very well to be very good.
It's one of those decks that's very all the good cards. It's a very all the good cards kind of deck.
Yeah.
But like card cost per what it does is just, it blows everything out of the water. Yeah. Yeah. Like it's just an obvious choice to look at.
I'll probably have to sit down and talk with Alex him because I don't play a lot of midrange. You know, I'm very aggro. I've tried the control, but I like the let's sit down and play and then walk away 20 minutes later, three games in.
Right.
Well, I think I'll be joining you on that plan. Yeah, I was looking at Atarka Red. I mean, I was looking at the control decks that came out so far, the five color Bring to Light decks and things like that. They're interesting, but man, like they're just not really my speed. And I think if I can't control people, then yeah, I'm on the same plan. Let's just jam some quick games.
Yeah, I did play against the five color this weekend, and it it's good at having answers because it not only has answers because it runs five colors. So it has the Crackling Dooms. It has the board wipes. It can answer anything and then it can bring to light for them. So it does have some resiliency in that. It's just, it's one of the, it's bring to light is a interesting card. I know a lot of people are hot on it right now and I'm not so hot on it just for the reason that yes, it's a tutor for something out of your deck. However, now that card's not in your deck.
Yeah.
So like if you need it, if you tutor up your one of then and you need it again, they're just not there. Like,
yeah, because it runs a lot of one ofs.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So you could spend it early and get countered.
Yeah, because that's the other thing that because you cast the card, it surges up. So then that can get countered. So you lost the Bring Light out of your hand and a Silver Bullet out of your deck.
Yeah.
And it feels like a 2-for-1.
Yeah, it is kind of a weird because it's not a traditional 2-for-1 at all because they're using one card, but they are cutting a number out of the deck overall. So it's like a 1.5
for one. Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we watched it play. It has a solid base.
No, it has the mana is great in five color. Like they don't have any issue with mana, so that's great. Five color is completely viable. Maybe Bring Delight's not like controls. Probably not the way to go there. With perfect mana, you can do five color aggro or mid range. And I think that's probably better in my opinion.
Yeah, because I think looking at it, it's definitely viable, especially if you're going late game.
Yeah.
Because that late game typically control has it. The thing I like, though, is it has how we talk about tempo swings. Because, I mean, they have the ability if they want to go, converge?
Mm-hmm.
They converge big enough, they can go get their Rhino to do the tempo swing. But the problem is blue is a color. You know, and they can easily just be setting on a counter spell. And I agree, it can be a solid 2-for-1 because if that's the silver bullet, you know, they need, they could just stop you in your tracks and now you just lose harder.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's a pile of good stuff. So I don't think one counter spell is not going to do it. And there's also still kind of the argument that like, well, if they weren't playing Bring to Light and they were just playing the card naturally, you can still just counter it anyway. So it's not really, I don't know where I value that.
I just look at if we took the card Bring to Light out, would it still be a deck or would it just be a pile of cards?
It would be a pile of good cards.
It'd be a pile of,
you know what I mean? Like, so,
but with the, and to me, that's the thing. Bring to Light is it's the card that allows them to be a good pile of good cards because you can get what you need at that time.
Whereas right, yeah, I mean, it becomes whatever you need.
If they have the ability to counter it, now it's just a pile of good cards doing nothing.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, it runs four of the Bring to Light, so you have additional shots at it. And then, like, I don't like the deck, but I like the deck at the same time. I think it's going to stick around. I don't know, though, with looking at the mana and how they're running it, I don't know if five colors like a good-to-go confirmed yet.
Oh, no, like I've like seen it in aggro.
Yeah, I mean, and I watched quite a few games, and there were most of the games they were doing good, but there were still some where they stumbled. Like, I don't know. You would still have to be base, like, three colors and then slight splashes. Like,
it comes down to knowing the deck and what you have to fetch for. Yeah. Like, I was talking to one of the guys I played that was running, and that was the problem he was having is because he looks at his hand, he sees what he has, he sees what he can fetch for, but a lot of times you have to know, like, oh, I have to fetch for this one because it's a one of, if I draw it, I don't.
Right.
Like, I have to have this mana on this turn. Like, it's just a higher learning curve on the mana base. But
and then
is,
also not spending yourself where if you fetch, I don't want to get too deep into an example, but you could get to a point where you fetch in a way to where future fetches are dead now.
Right.
There's no longer a target. So I guess my point, though, is more so like five color, it works within this deck, but I don't know if it would work like with aggro or just with any other deck, just because you're kind of jumping through some hurdles to get to that.
I think it works fine as long as you're not trying to run too many double pip cards.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They did because someone brought up that a lot of the Bring to Light decks weren't running Dig Through Time. And they were running Treasure Cruise just because the Dig Through Time's the double blue. And they said, that's the thing. You don't want to get stuck on a double color right now.
Yeah, it's a little prohibitive.
But late game, it's fine. But when you're just trying to get your five colors in the beginning, you don't want anything stuck in you on double a certain color.
Yeah. Yeah, no. But I mean, so it's an interesting list. I don't know if it's going to turn out to be a good week one list or just a good list in general. But I mean, that's kind of the asterisk with all of these decks right now. I mean, Abzan in some form is going to stick around. That aggro deck, it's still pretty good. It didn't punch through the top eight, but one tournament's not really enough to rule it out. That may have just been bad beats, whatever.
You look, they just added blue. So
Yeah, I think it was just mostly sideboard.
How many people have been playing Abzan for the past 6 months? Right. Anyone who's been competing,
it's so gonna stick around.
You know how to go at it. You know how to beat it. Now, oh, they got a counter spell or something cool to spice it up. So
yeah, there was a lot of cards that rotated out or in and out with Abzan. It's still the same shell, just new players in certain spots.
Yeah, I mean, you lose like some of the hand disruption, the Thoughtseize mainly. But, you know, I mean, there's still tons of good. Plus Siege Rhino, like,
it's still Siege
how
Rhino.
Far away is the next rotation? Like,
6 months.
Yeah, so sick of that card. But it's still good. It's always been good. It's going to stick around. And then once it rotates, nostalgic people will be jamming it in every modern deck they can, and we'll deal with it there.
Yeah.
It's never going to go away. But, yeah, so, I mean, the format looks pretty sweet, though, so far. I'm definitely waiting I'm very anxious to see the Pro Tour. I want to see a new spicy deck. You know what I mean? I was pretty disappointed. Like, was it on Tronzy? He was running a ramp into
Eldrazi
deck.
Yep.
And I don't think he ended up doing too hot. I mean, he had a decent run, but not, you know, top eight, tops, nothing like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was itching to see some Eldrazi on camera, man. Like, there really wasn't like.
Yeah, there was none there. But like I said, I played against the Mono Green, beat me in top four, and that deck is ridiculously good, because I knew Ulamog was good, and that was one of the things when people saw, like, will this card actually get cast? Can you only, you know, see the unwritten into play? I'll tell you firsthand, it's castable.
Yeah.
Very quick, turn six or seven.
Yeah.
Which, obviously not fast for other formats, but for standard, that's fine.
Yeah. It's totally fine.
And then also the thing with it is the exile is on cast, not resolution.
Right.
So even if it gets countered, do you still get to exile two permanents? And the land that allows you to sack when you cast a colorless that costs more than seven to go search up an Eldrazi. So you cast an Ulamog, sack a land, go get another Ulamog, exile two things. You countered it. Oh, I got another one next turn. Like,
yeah, no, I definitely think that's one to keep an eye on. And that might have been a sleeper Pro Tour deck that we'll see too.
Right.
Yeah, just a side note, the top deck for Eldrazi, at least being titled, is 39th place, is green white.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
So it's mono green was the one that you played against, right?
Yeah. I mean, and green white's an easy splash. Like Dragalore, Jamoka, and like, you know, they can't even counter and stuff like that. It's a solid deck. I think I think it's a Pro Tour deck.
What's Ulamog at price wise right now?
20-ish. 20?
That might be a good pickup. If you're interested in this deck, if you're interested in casting Ulamogs, like, I'd probably go and scoop him up because he's at Mythic Rare. So yep. if this busts out the Pro Tour, then those are going on up.
Gonna follow Jace.
Yeah. Oh, geez, I know. that was maybe the most disheartening part of the whole open for me, was just seeing that crazy price spike on Jace. Like,
yep.
I don't know. We'll see what happens with that. I don't think that's a permanent price, but
it's not gonna come below 50 or 60.
Yeah, exactly. He's not gonna come down much. So we'll see what happens with that.
When was the last time we saw a standard card selling for $80 non foil?
Was it Mind Sculptor? Was there anything?
Maybe.
I just went and looked at Mind Sculptors. He's at the same price.
He's the same price as Snapcaster. Like,
yeah. Well, Snapcaster's back down to like 60-ish.
Yeah, then.
But yeah, but I mean, you know, it's. I think that might have been the last standard card that went up that high.
I was going to say, I can't recall, other than Mind Sculptor, a card being this expensive in standard.
What blows my mind about it some is just that I don't. I mean, I understand, like, haven't we seen this situation before, though, where there's a good card, it's at Mythic, it's in a core set, so it's not printed very often, and it pops up in a bunch of decks.
Yeah.
I don't remember this situation playing out to equal $80 card before. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't think we had one that could fit into pretty much any deck with the color that it has.
Yeah, it's one blue, so it splashes in everything running blue. And it's good enough.
Much everything but a Tarkaran.
Yeah, it's its own engine. It like, really Merfolk Looter is always good. It's its own engine, and then it flips and gets even more. Like, it goes in every blue deck. If you're running blue and you're not earning Jace, then you either have a certain deck that just can't run it, like some kind of combo or something like that, or you just can't afford it.
$400 lying around, yeah. Yeah, I guess the thing that bones me out the most about that Jace, though, is that, like, I still really don't even like that card.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
It's good. It's fine. Like,
no,
but it's not Mind Sculptor.
Like, I was on the same train. Like, when it first came out, I super underevaluated. I'm like, it's okay. It's a Merfolk Looter. Good effect. Not going to be much better than that. I've been playing with them now for a while, running four of Jeskai, and it's amazing.
Yeah, all right. Like, maybe I'm just slow to the party on this one. But man, I guess it doesn't have that like Jace the Mind Sculptor. You go buy one of those, like, yeah, you're like, yeah, I know I'm spending a bunch of money, but like, it's the Mind Sculptor. Like, it's okay.
I mean,
this doesn't have that. It just like, man, it feels so bad.
It's the Vryn's prodigy.
Yeah. It's that little baby Jace. He might turn into a planeswalker. Stay tuned.
He's being played in all formats now, too, so.
Yeah, but his modern play is, like, I don't want to call it fringe because it's not that low, but it's all, he's not taking over the format. No, you know what I mean?
He's like, under-tested. People are slow. And he's even popping up in a few Legacy stuff. So, if he's already starting to pop up in Legacy, which is a super slow-to-change format, he's going to go there.
We'll see. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Now it's on recording, so if I'm wrong, I can't get out of it. But I guess it's not so much like if he were already being slotted up as a four of in Legacy and Modern in a bunch of decks, I would be a little more okay with spending that money. But man, I'm just
so anyway. Let's talk about some Jeskai Black as I ran Jeskai tournament. It was a conversation I've had with people also running Jeskai of it actually helps fix them. It makes the mana better in a four color because you add Polluted Delta. Because before you just run Flooded Strand to get Prairie Stream or your Island or Plains, you had Polluted Delta, so now you get Smoldering Marsh and your Swamp or whatever free. So actually, it adds a red fetch that you didn't have before, and the black's free, essentially.
Yeah.
And there was two in top eight.
Yeah, no, I like the list. There's quite a few that popped up on camera, and I mean, the deck always looks fine. Like, you don't cut into your mana base at all to run it, so why not?
Exactly.
Now these lists, they were different, right? They weren't
They went two completely different routes. One was going for the Dragon Master Outcast and Butcher the Horde, and also Dromoka's Command.
Crackling Doom, obviously.
Crackling Doom, and then the other one, he brought in Tasker instead of Butcher the Horde, which I like a lot better.
Yeah,
as well as Crackling Doom and Culligan's Command.
Well, I think Butcher is fine. He just didn't go all in on it as a one of, but he was trying to interact with Butcher and Hangerback.
That's right.
That's perfectly fine. Those two are going to go together.
Value.
Yeah, yeah. I just don't like the Dragon Master Outcast. I understand why it's there. It's another Ojutai's Command target. You pitch it to Jace early, bring it back with Ojutai's Command when you have enough lands to get a 5/5 dragon.
Yeah, it went ham on camera. Like, there was one game where I think he got three or four of the 5/5s and he missed a trigger. I mean, but yeah, I don't know if that's actually a real card that needs to be in there.
It's a little cute. Yeah,
exactly. But hey, man, it got its day in the light. And the guy playing that deck, he was a young guy. He was like high school age, maybe. But yeah, but anyway, so I like Tasker. I like the interactions with Jace filling up the yard, slamming early Tasker after he flips. I mean, it seems like either way you go with this build is pretty cool. And I mean, really, it just opens the door for a lot of stuff. I mean, Crackling Doom is like...
It's one of the better
good card. Yeah.
There's not much instant speed removal right now, so you have to play with what you have, and Crackling Doom's a cut above most.
And then, you know, Jace adds the extra benefit of like, well, now you have two of them. So, man, like back to back on those is pretty rough.
For sure.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's not an auto lose, but especially if we move towards these Eldrazi ramp decks, like pull the plug on their plan pretty easily and then do it again if they try to go for it again. So, I mean, that's definitely a good answer.
Yeah, I think Hand Disruption is going to come back. Like, obviously, we just lost Thoughtseize, so everybody just kind of ignored it. I think Duress is completely justified to play main deck and things like that. I think that's going to start coming back next.
Well, you did gain one too, a Transgress the Mind.
Right, for bigger creatures.
Right.
I'm talking about more of protection from removal.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah, for Duress and things like that. And then I think Abzan can just run it because Abzan can run anything. But
yeah, at least in the sideboard. I mean, yeah. And then we still have Despise too, right?
Correct.
Yes.
So, I mean, there's still options, and they're not bad options. They've never been bad. But, yeah, I mean, you're dead on where, like, Thoughtseize rotates, and people are just like, oh, we're abandoning that ship. Like, done with that, I guess. But, nah, there's still plenty of options around. And then what was the other? Yeah, Abzan Blue we talked about a little bit earlier. Those were, like, the two free color splash decks.
There was Jeskai Green, where it gets Canopy Vista, and it runs Dragonlord Jamoka. Instead of, like, Ojutai or any of that. So it's Mance Rider, and Dragonlord Jamoka is, like, the two flyers that it goes for.
That's probably my favorite thing that I saw out of this standard so far is just the mana. I mean, it opens up a lot of doors. It makes sense why people played these decks this week. They're easy. Yep. You have the cards, but like, there's no telling what's going to pop out of this. I think there are definitely some really cool decks in there, especially once we get into like Oath coming out, you know, next year.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited. I'm eager for some change in Standard.
The format's different already.
It's different already, but I want some drastic changes. Let's shake this thing up. But yeah, so that was pretty much it for the new decks, right? You guys didn't see anything else sneaking around?
Not at the Open. I've seen some stuff at local. A lot of Aristocrats decks kind of popping up.
I've seen that pop up. Just like people putting it together.
Yeah, Blood Artist is back. I'm looking at Sam Black when he plays the Pro Tour. He usually plays Aristocrats when it's a deck or a Blood Artist and things. So that'll...
If it pops up, that's where it'll be.
I'm curious to see, because there's two divisions of it right now. There's the Abzan Rally is using it with husks and things like that.
Yeah.
And Evolutionary Leap, and like you can just keep getting value. And there's the Mardu side of it, because you have like Butcher of the Horde and like other value creatures there to have your Hordling Outbursts.
Sack outlets and sack benefits, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, that'll be cool too. Hopefully Sam Black does something cool with that, or anybody else if they feel inclined. That definitely, I think the tools are there. So we'll see what comes of that. I mean, that's pretty much any final thoughts on Standard before we get out of this?
It's pretty sweet. I initially was very hesitant. I was like, oh, it's going to suck. It's going to be bombs. It is bombs, but they're sweet bombs. It's good.
I like seeing the card Evolutionary Leap getting played. For the people who are used to playing against control, it gives you a way of, well, you just cast a card that does nothing now, because I can just sack
just
out.
Keep and get, replacing, yeah.
Yeah, build so the army. I'm excited about that card. Maybe I'll play with it some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in the sideboard of that green-white deck. It was doing work on camera.
Yep.
But all right, we'll go ahead and get out of this segment. We'll be back after the break to talk about how we afford to stay competitive, budget things, all kinds of stuff. You'll see. All right, welcome back, everybody. So for this segment, we actually had a submission from a listener, Brandon Clark, who asked about us covering just how we afford to stay competitive. And it's a great idea for a segment, so we're going to use it. So if more people want to suggest things, that'd be great. But no, so anyway, I mean, it does get expensive. And it's definitely, there's a lot of tricks to the trade that you can use to sort of hedge against those expenses. So I figure we'll talk about some of them. So the first one is like looking at, it's perfect for this because of the Open and with their Pro Tour coming up, looking into decks that you see as they become a thing, as they break the ice, as they come out. Usually you'll have cards that are priced at $4, $5 or $1 or $2 that suddenly spike up to $15 or $20. So that's a great way. Anything come to mind recently? I think you guys had some last Standard, right?
I will see the internet and shout out this. Still, it didn't even get played at the Open, but it still shot up to $8 from,
oh, really?
From
it's up $2 to $8
to $3.
Now?
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a great example of like we were trading for some. We would throw them in. They were like $2 for a long time. So we'd pick them up if they had them at shops. We would trade for them, add them in as like bonus add-ins, like, you know, when the trade wasn't quite even. And Manus Rider last time, right? That was one you guys bought into that shot up.
We started at $1 in the beginning of Saturday. And by the end of Saturday, you couldn't pick it up for cheaper than $6. The next day, I think it spiked all the way up to $8 or $9.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's two benefits. One, if you like the deck and you want to get it, there you go. You save some money. And then the flip side is if you grab some extras, now you have trade fodder to go towards things you do need. So
yeah.
You can play it on both angles. I know people kind of have mixed feelings about speculations and people buying out cards. So, you know, I can't say go buy 60 of them, but, you know, pick up 8, pick up 12, trade the spares, you know, whatever. It's a nice way to kind of get into a new standard without breaking the bank too much. Do you guys have any specific tricks you guys like the most? I don't want to just go down the list.
The big ones to look at are mythics as far as like buy, like, speculating and stuff like that. You just look for a mythic that's really cheap. Usually mythics are harder to find. Jace is a prime example. He pre-sold at 20, now he's 80, things like that. Like,
and that's one of those ones that's harder to jump on because 20 did not feel like a good deal then.
Right.
But man, in retrospect, I think most people would love to buy one for 20 now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
We also look at the sets. How much was that set cracked?
Because
that's a big, what causes a big jump right there is how many are just naturally out there? Because if it's already, you know, what we picked them up, see the unwritten's at $1 at
$2.
The Grand Prix.
Yeah, $1, $2, yep.
And, you know, now we're at 4 times what we had into them.
Yeah.
If we just start trading them.
Yeah, so to go back to the point of the set, like, we're getting away from core sets. Those are over now, but that used to be the prime example.
Yeah.
Second sets in a block tend to not sell as well. There's not as much hype. So what happens is they just don't, not as many packs are opened. And then beyond that, with the draft formats, you don't, like, with the first set in a block, you draft three packs of that set. Whereas in the second, you draft some of the first set, some of the second. So right there, I mean, when you think about everybody in the world drafting, that cuts out a lot less.
Yeah, prime example, that was Brimass.
Yep. Perfect, yeah.
He wasn't played much, but he was still really expensive. He was from that second set that just didn't sell well, and yeah, just high rarity, and couldn't get him for cheap.
Yep, there you go. Yeah, Mythics from second and third sets used to be, now I guess just second, but...
Yeah.
But, you know, Mythics from second and third sets and core sets were the prime targets for, I mean, if they saw any play at all, they'd jump up. So aside, though, from speculating and things, let's talk about some more of the, like, more intuitive things. Traveling, we've talked about this before. That's a great way. Going as a group, splitting hotel costs.
Saving on gas costs.
Yeah, I mean, pretty much every expense aside from meals is split between, you know, you can fit four people into a hotel room, fine.
Yep.
And I mean, to give a good example of this, we're looking at going to GP Pittsburgh right now, and we're looking at numbers for different possibilities, different options, different amounts of people, just to see what brings it down the most. And usually you can put in, like, not very much time to get a lot of savings out of it. So there's a lot of room there to save. But going back to more like cards and the formats, I trade a lot. I think we all trade pretty frequently.
Yep.
And something that, like, right now it's a great time to be trading because of fetch lands being in standard.
Right.
I really try to get settled into a standard deck as fast as I can, get that deck built and be done with it. Because then at that point, as you're opening prize packs, like, any rares that aren't going to see play outside of standard, trade them into fetch lands, trade them into Tassigers. I mean, what else do we have? There's some other modern Atarka's Command.
Yep. But any of the commands are Colligan's Command, Dromoka's Command, they're all modern playable.
Yeah. So, I mean, looking at cards that are going to survive that price dip when standard rotates. Right. So trading, I mean, like I said, stay actively trading even once you have your deck finished. Trade into safer things, even trade things that are going to rotate soon into stuff that's going to rotate later. I mean, just to get more longevity, because I think we were all pretty much ill-prepared the first time standard rotated for us. We were playing the game, weren't really thinking about it. We all lost tons of value on cards when they rotated.
Rev's
a big one. It's it's coming back slowly. But
that's how I was playing mono and black, and the only thing that really survived was Downfall and Thoughtseize. Everything else is just gone. It doesn't see much play in anything.
Thoughtseize, that's another great one. Thoughtseize, you can get online for like $18 right now. That's the cheapest it's been in a long time.
So
I mean, looking into trading in a way to where you're not losing value. Usually like 3 months before rotation is when prices start to dip down a little bit. They don't tank, but they do take a decent hit. So 4 months before rotation, start moving that stuff. I mean, just if you're active enough with trade binders at tournaments and at FNMs and things like that, you can get a lot of trades going. And then that way, you're just, once rotation hits, you're looking good.
And there's also online trading as well, Deckbox, Pika Trade, things like that, that you can continue to get that value. People want random things for Commander or just pet decks that you're just like, oh, I can unload this.
One big thing too with online trading is it's scary at first. You send off that first trade, you're like, oh, there goes $40 in cards. I really hope the other person's honest on the other end. And they are. That's one thing to just try to get past is we've all done a lot of trading with a Puka Trade, with a Deck Box, and I've yet to be burned. I don't think you've been burned. I haven't heard of any of us being burned on these trades.
No.
And I'm up to 62 trades on Deckbox, no problem.
And you're getting value for value, and that's the biggest thing. And like Bobby was saying, you know, trade for those cards that are going to last, because look at Polluted Deltas right now. They're over $20 a piece.
Yeah.
Just, 6 months ago, they're 13.
Yep.
Yeah.
And they're going to continue to go up.
All the fetch lines have slowly started to creep up because cons isn't being opened anymore.
Right.
I mean, that's the thing that I love is, I mean, MTG singles, they really do work pretty much just like the stock market.
Yep.
I mean, the same trends, everything. So cons isn't being opened anymore. So now the fetch lines have already started to climb. They're not going to dip at rotation. I mean, they might, but what, a dollar or two? Nothing worth writing home about. And then they're going to start that steady increase again shortly thereafter. So trading in, I mean, that's probably my favorite one right now is Fetchlands. Trade into Fetchlands every chance you get, you know. But yeah, Puka Trade is a great one because for anyone who's newer to trading, you'll find that trading standard into modern or legacy cards can be tricky.
Yeah.
Especially ones that aren't in standard right now. So Puka Trade, the way it works is every time you send off a card, you get, you know, their online credit currency, whatever, for it. And then you list things you want and people send it to you. So it's a great way to trade in $2, $3, $4 here and there into a $30 modern card.
Right.
I mean, it's easy. And like, you know, you look at selling to a store, you're going to lose 30, 40, 50, 60% off of the price right off the bat for the convenience. Whereas when you're trading, you're getting that full value for the card. And even like, even if you don't have like cash to put out for cards as they spike, usually online traders are a little bit slower to react. So if you see a card that's spiking in a deck, it's not going to adjust the price online for 2 or 3 days for as far as trading sites are concerned. So get on there and start making some deals. I mean, move the stuff you have for the stuff they have. And I know some people have like mixed feelings on that because it feels kind of scummy, but from a stock market perspective, like that's how it works. Information is valuable. If you put in the time to understand what's going on with the card and someone else didn't, I can't put that on them. Like,
I do the trades on Facebook a lot, and that's a lot more risky than like you guys do Puka trades. And but I'll tell you, because of the community, if someone does rip you out, like usually they do it with low value standard cards, they catch them quick.
Yeah.
They put them on that because they have other sites too that they put them on the do not trade list with this guy, which blasts out to all the other sites that do the trading.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, information, just like the information moves so fast in the digital era that if someone gets you for a $5 card, that's probably the last time they're going to get someone. Yeah.
They get one shot. I mean, I just saw on Deckbox the other day, I had a trade that was still open and I was trying to figure out why. And I guess the guy had gotten flagged for something and he's done.
Yeah.
My trade went with them fine. I don't know what happened, but they're quick also on there to really get that settled. And I mean, like for higher dollar trades, you can put tracking on it. And most of the sites will side with you if you put tracking and it gets lost, or if you can prove they didn't get it, or you can prove they did get it and they're claiming they didn't. But I mean, I started on Deckbox with like $10 trades, and I always had the mantra in my head of like, if someone screws me over, I'll just be done.
Right.
And I'm still, I mean, that was over a year ago. So, I mean, it's pretty safe. I like it a lot, and it's a great way to keep value in your cards, because rotation, I mean, that just, hundreds of dollars. I mean, we're talking about cleaning out our trade binders now from this rotation. It's miserable to see, but it's a lot, you know, a lot better than it would have been if I hadn't have been trading stuff out.
I would always recommend the tracking too, because I know doing the Facebook trading like I do, that's how we prove to each other that we've sent the card. Like we send on the same day. You send them a picture of the actual receipt with the tracking number. And I don't know how true it is, but one guy said a guy tried to screw him over. He sent him a picture. When he checked the tracking, it was going to like Arizona. So when he went and talked to the prosecuting attorney for his county, he said, I can't help you because since it's through the mail over state lines, it's a federal case now.
Mm.
So whenever he messaged the dude that says, hey, I'm talking to a federal prosecuting attorney for mail fraud. His cards got sent to him overnight, like lickety split. I mean, just something to keep in mind. It gives you that insurance there if you're sending live pictures of your tracking. And you can find out really quick, like, you know, why is this going to Arizona and not my house?
Yeah, and a great way to get that tracking in there for cheap, too, is with PayPal. The setup that I'm using is I have a little food scale that has a little dolly on it on top that you put stuff on, so I can weigh it out and get my exact weight. And you can go on PayPal's website and type in the weight, the type of package and all that. You can add the insurance to it, and then you can also add tracking to it. And usually it's like $3 tops to send out stuff. Yeah. So once you get into like $40, $50, $60 trades and on up, like, man, that's well worth it. You print out the label and everything, throw it right on there, and you're good to go. So once you get like set up with, you know, you buy some of the like the packaging materials, the top loaders and whatnot, it's really not a bad deal. And I mean, I was watching the open yesterday, our Tarka Red. I was like, all right, I think I'm sold on this deck, and I've got like half the deck on the way to me already.
Yeah.
Between buying some cheap singles and between buying, you know, trading some stuff off,
That's something I want to talk about too, is buying singles.
Yep.
It's a common mistake I see for newer players that are already playing on a budget, but they're trying to play more expensive decks. And they're wondering, like, how do I get from this budget deck to not? And it's because they buy packs usually.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, I'm going to try my luck, crack this pack, hope I get what I need, or hope I can trade for something. But typically in a set, there's a lot of bulk rares. There's a lot of bulk. There's a lot of filler that you're not going to get your value for a pack. So just buy the singles you need. Save the money on the pack. Save that $3 and send it towards the single you actually need.
Yeah. Yeah, you'll save tons of time and money that way. I mean, looking for a specific card out of a booster is a nightmare. That's going to take forever. Then even looking for equivalent value to trade. And then a lot of times, you know, yeah, a card may be worth $2 at rare, but if no one wants it, it might as well be worth nothing.
Exactly.
Like, it's not going anywhere. It's just going to fill your binder up. So, yeah, no, buying singles, that's the way to go. There's no way around it. It feels bad at first because you're just flat out. I think that people, when you're buying packs, you kind of have this feeling of like, oh, it's okay. It's not that expensive. But if you really sat down and tracked how much you put into boosters, like, a booster's just a scratcher ticket.
Yep.
If you want to have fun with a scratcher ticket, it's fine. I'm not putting it down. I still buy them from time to time, but it's the same as people who aren't putting away to retirement and they're buying scratcher tickets waiting to hit it big. Like, most of them never are going to.
It's the exact same. It's the lottery. Yeah. And just like the lottery, the odds are stacked against you.
Absolutely.
Know? So you got to figure, what do they stack? How many of these are they going to put per box?
Yeah. Now, it's rarity and whatnot.
Yeah. Of that, what are the odds that you're going to pull the one or two packs that needs it? So it doesn't seem like it when you're swiping your card for $200 at the time and you're like, oh man, if I'd only opened, you know, 10 booster packs, I could have got this at $30 or whatever the case may be. But then you're like, oh well, I got one out of the one card that I needed out of the 10.
Yeah. Well, and then you also make, in my opinion, you make money back buying singles if you're playing competitive. Like me, I play competitive. I buy singles, I don't buy packs. Then when I go to an IQ or a PBTQ or open or whatever, you know, and I win packs, and then I'll crack those for trade fodder or to sell off or whatever. And that's how I keep my standard collection up and things like that. Like, I don't buy packs anymore. I don't buy a box. I haven't bought a box since cons because I wanted fetches. Yeah, I have a box worth of Dragons, Origins, Fate because I've won winner boxes and things like that. It's just cheaper in the long run. Just buy your deck, suck it up, then win prizes with it, and then use those to buy your next deck, you know, or trade for your next deck and pay it forward and keep rolling it.
Yeah. I think all my pack purchases, I bought one box just to have the enjoyment of it.
Right. Like.
And then most of them are when stores have credit card limits and it's only $5-$6 bucks sure. in the tournament. I got to get one or two to hit that limit.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much it. Yeah, because it's, you know, in the long run, you're going to save way more money getting the singles. I understand it doesn't feel good. It's not as exciting.
Right.
I think people get sort of this bad confirmation bias where they buy a junk pack, whatever, and then they finally buy one, they hit a $20 card and like, oh yeah, look, I just made all this money, $20 out of a $4 pack, but they spent $30 on packs last week and bought junk rares. So, you know, I understand, but you gotta cut that out.
Yeah.
Cut it out.
and then it comes down to, like I've won a bunch of packs and stuff and I crack those. And then now I have those cards for when people need to borrow them. Because borrowing is another great way to save money.
Whew, what a segue.
Wow.
Nailed it.
Killing it. We're getting so good at this. But so borrowing, that's another, I mean, it's great. I thought Rob was laughing, he's sneezing. But so that's another great way to keep up with your budget to help. So the best way to start borrowing cards from people is let other people borrow some of your cards.
Right.
I mean, before you know it, you've got 20 or so people that are willing to lend you cards. I mean, having a tight knit group, you know, the four, I guess five of us, we'll include Jerry. We miss him very much today, but, but having a group of people that all play together makes it easier to pass cards around. You save tons of money. You don't have to buy into a deck fully and then find out you don't like the deck. You can try it out for a tournament. You can flip around a little bit more. And then if you do like it, you can slowly trade. I think, it's been a long time since I played a deck that I owned 100% off.
Yeah, and that's fine as long as you know, like, oh, yep, we're like, I have lists of all, this is all the cards that I have out to people. This is all the cards I've borrowed. If it's time to make an exchange, like, I just reference it, cross it out, say, yep, this happened, they're back.
Yeah, do it smart. I like Chris's system. He puts the
index,
like,
writes, cards.
Yeah, index card with a name on it, puts in his trade binder with what it was and who has it.
Cut index cards up and just throw them in. And it's easy. Once they give you your cards back, you just
take it out, throw it away.
Throw it out.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot.
And that just, it came about because I, what was it? It was last set. I mean, we had cards
all over the place.
Like, it just got so confusing that we just had piles of cards. And it's like, no one knows where this one went, and I think I let so and so borrow it, and it doesn't personally bother me, just as long as eventually it makes its way back so you can sell it back to someone for bulk.
If you just make the realization that you need a system ahead of time, then you'll be fine. Oh,
and that was the problem. We were already you know,
there's the wild, wild west.
6 months into the format, and we're like, where's this card? I don't know. I thought I gave it back.
Alex had borrowed it from Chris. I'd borrowed it from Alex while he still had it, and I'd let Rob use it for the interview. It's like, we had no clue. We had to call CSI to work this out. As we were having a 2-hour sit down session where we just pulled everything out and tried to work it out. But so put a system into place sooner rather than later. We're a big fan of Google Drive. We use that for all of our stuff. You can throw a spreadsheet on there and keep track. Chris's system is awesome. A good manual system is always good. So, you know, be smart about it. But yeah, definitely, like, be generous with your cards, and then you'll get it back in return. So let's see. Going down the list here, what else do you guys got? What else do you
like? Another one to brush on is upgrading decks.
Ooh, yeah.
Going to FNM with a deck that's close, missing like a few rares or something, but there's equivalent cheaper substitutions, and then using prize packs once again for trade and things like that, and working to the full list. I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, I like having a plan, because mono red decks, there's usually a creature that may not be quite as good, but you'll still snag wins off of it at FNM, and it's fine.
Yep.
And you know, if you, like, let's say you have $200 to spend, there's a mono red deck that's $250, and there's a control deck that's $700. You really want to play the control deck? Don't. Right. Just play mono red. Be competitive. Like, if that's your goal. I mean, if you're just trying to have fun, then do whatever you want. But if you're looking to upgrade a deck and upgrade into better things, like, buy whatever will be the most competitive for you at that price range. Learn that archetype. Have some fun with it. And use winnings from that to build into other stuff. Because there are, like, be careful with substitute cards. I know we've all played against a deck where they've put something in there as a substitute, and like, that, the deck falls apart without that card. Like,
and there's certain cards that fit that, and then there are other that are, the substitute's fine.
Exactly.
You just have to know what that is, and that comes down to having a plan as well. Have an end goal. Like, oh, I eventually want to play, you know, a Tarka red, but a Tarka's command is, you know, expensive right now, so I'm not going to buy them yet. So I'm just going to play mono red and work towards a Tarka's command and things like that.
All right, so then another way, this is something that I tell people constantly when they're looking to get competitive, is draft.
Yeah.
If you can't afford a tier one deck, like, it, no problem, man. Like, I understand. It's hard to shell out that cash, especially for cardboard. So go draft. I mean, most of the times you're spending, what, like 10, 12, 15 bucks tops?
Yeah.
You're getting some value out of the packs right there. And if you can win a pack or two on top of that, you're looking pretty good. And then you're still honing your skills, like...
That's what I did when I decided to come back in. I drafted for the first 6 weeks because my buddy was like, you can go with me. We'll draft.
Yeah.
To give you an idea. And draft starts to hone your play skills so much.
For sure.
And then at the end, I got the cards that I got, and my buddy already had his deck. So he's like, here, you can have these cards too.
Yeah. Using support systems.
Yep. Yeah. You get into the community, you break into the competitive scene. I know we've talked about drafting as to how to get more competitive before too. So I don't want to get too much into it, but it makes sense from a financial standpoint too.
The other one to look at for tournaments is, sometimes stores do, like a pack per win tournaments. Yeah. Like, even if you don't top A and get that prize support, but you got three wins that day, you get three packs or you know, however they work that price.
Yeah, look at how competitive the payouts are, because in a more competitive tournament, the payouts are going to be very top heavy. It's going to be top 8 at a minute, like, and maybe even just top 4. Whereas with a more casual driven tournament, it's going to be something like that, like a pack per win, or everyone gets a pack for participating.
Yeah.
And like, that's a great way to start, but then also be aware, like, don't be the big fish in the pond where you're winning that and getting, you know, a little portion of the prize payout. Once you start doing good, move up to, you know, the more competitive tournaments. So yeah, I mean, I think with all of these in conjunction, like, always enjoy the game. Like, I can't stress that out right. enough. Like, don't get
don't too hold deep. It to the stock market. There's not gonna be a Black Friday or Black Tuesday or whatever. Like,
yeah, exactly. Don't put all your chips into this basket. But be aware. I mean, if you're conscious of these options, and if you put, I mean, it really is one of those things where you can put a little bit of time into it and get a lot out of it.
Yeah.
One of the other things, we just slightly hit on it, traveling together and lowering the price per person. When you can start filling up a truck or a car, that lowers it significantly. The other thing is big events. All right. They're usually held at major cities. Yep. I've been doing a lot of the hotel calling. So if you get on Wizards website, whenever a Grand Prix is going to hit, they almost always have a special rate with a hotel.
Same with opens. Yeah. Same with opens.
So when I just called, where was the next?
Pittsburgh.
All right. Pittsburgh, the room we were looking at is $300 a night. Wizards of the Coast has it down to $135 and it'll hold four people.
Yeah. Solid.
That's dirt cheap. The other thing is, if you even need it cheaper, a lot of people don't know KOA campgrounds. Usually have cabins you can rent, and they're even cheaper. You start looking at anywhere from $60 to $100 a night. You can, if you're willing to sleep in a sleeping bag, you can easily fit four people in a cabin.
Right. Yeah. I mean, if you want to sleep in a sleeping bag, you can just go sleep in the woods, man.
Yeah.
Just get a shopping cart.
I mean, we lucked out. I was looking at getting a travel trailer anyway, so we're looking at the possibility of staying at a KOA for $68 a night.
Yeah.
I mean, that's still less than half. I mean, there's several options out there financially to look at. The biggest one is, if you can fit four people in a room, maximize that four people in the room. We've started looking though at like how the person sleeps, like, you know, the
that's
snores.
A big thing. Yeah. Who the are the snores? They're
we
not
make
coming
them
anymore.
Buy earplugs and bring them to us. Like, none of us really snore that loud, but we had one guy. I mean, he could literally saw a log in half in his sleep. It was amazing.
There's a selection process now.
But you know, but the bottom line, what it comes down to is just if. Being aware, man, I feel like I say this almost every episode, but being aware of these ways and putting a little bit of effort into them has a huge payout. Like,
it goes a long way.
Yep. Just count your pennies, man. Look at the different options and see what you want to do about it. I mean, make some friends in other cities. Sleep on their couches. Like,
there is an app, Rent My Couch.
Sure.
I don't know if I can do
that. That's a little
shady,
but and I understand when you're first trying to get into Magic or getting competitive, you may not know your play style, so you might start out on the wrong deck.
You have some growing pains.
Once you know that, like, this is the decks I like to play, this is my style, then you can hone in on, this is what I'm going to play the whole standard and call it a day.
Yeah. And, you know, and I would say, too, like, even when you're newer, try to just lock into a deck. As long as it's a competitive, solid list, just lock into it. Like, when you're new, rotation feels like it's so far away, but once you get used to the cycle, man, it comes up on you so fast. Just play that deck.
Yep.
Enjoy, man. Win some packs. Don't blow all your money on standard. Standard's a huge pitfall. Like, I mean, you can throw tons of money into it if you're not careful.
Yeah.
So getting your money into modern, into the internal formats is a great way to go. I mean, I'm just repeating myself now. Just save some money. Stop messing around.
This is the accountant speaking.
This is where we get serious, right? Put the candles out. No, but yeah, so I think we've covered it all pretty well. Feel free to hit us up on Facebook, on our webpage. Find us walking around outside places. Whatever you got to do, man, hit us up. We'll give you some tips. I'll link Puka Trade. Remind me to link Puka Trade in there. We'll link some of these trading sites because I think we just kind of briefly mentioned the names. Get active, work all the angles, save some money.
Yeah.
But all right, so that's going to be it for this week. Before we get out of here, I wanted to talk a little bit about articles. Hopefully you guys have saw. If not, go check it out. We had an article posted this week by Alex some brews before the open, including the list he top four'd with, and including what was the fame for the other list? Didn't someone play it or something?
No, it was Jeskai Dragons to Mermaid Range, and then I did a budget deck to help
talk about the budget. Hey, stuff. Look at that. So topical.
Yeah.
But segues. So check the segues, killing it. So hot right now. But it's just the candles, I think. But yeah. But no, so check that out. And what we're looking for though is we want to look for people who are interested in writing Magic articles. We're very serious about quality, so I want to say that right out of the gate, but we don't mind editing things, we don't mind looking over and working with people. But if you're interested at all, send us some feedback, send us a message, get in contact with us, let's see what you got, because we want to offer more articles. And we also, like, I think that, I mean, we've learned a lot working on the podcast. Writing articles will make you better. Just, it sounds like I'm trying to talk them into something bad.
Yeah.
It'll make you better. Just do it. But yeah, so definitely hit us up though if you have an interest in that. We don't really have topics or anything that we're looking at right now, so we're open to anything. Aside from that, check out our Facebook page. We're getting some likes there. We post all of our announcements on there. Everything as it gets posted up is an easy way to keep a track of everything. But yeah, that'll do it for us.
Don't forget the feedback contest still going on.
Ooh, yeah. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got some entries in, but we want more.
And
we want to get one of those bingo ball things out here, and we need at least like 100 entrants to make that.
We're also going to open it up to feedback for articles. We'll get you entered as well.
Yeah, so if you want to go give some feedback on Alex's article, even if you want to submit articles, ideas, we'll throw you in the ring for that too. Pretty much any interaction on our site, aside from like you guys
let us know
suck,
what we're doing,
things like that. Yeah. You know, let us know how it's going, what you like, what you don't like. We really want to shape this more and more as we go along. So we really appreciate that feedback. That's all we're looking for out of this to gain is just some direction on what people want, what people don't want. Huge thanks to everybody who submitted feedback so far. It's been a huge help. It's really hard to look at your own thing that you're doing and really look at it from an outsider's perspective. So that's helped us a ton. So get on there, leave some feedback, get some entries. We got some packs that we're going to give away in case you didn't listen last week. I don't know what you're doing. But in case you didn't listen, we got some packs we're going to give away. So yeah, there might be some expeditions in it. Who knows? Go leave some feedback. But all right, that's going to do it for us this week. We're going to get out of here. Bye.